Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
You're listening to Achten Millwall.
Listening to Achten Millwall Emergency Broadcasting Special, a public service broadcast made on behalf of the Real Millwall Fan Show and Achten Millwall, broadcasting from South Bermondsey.
Oh, hello, dear listeners. Welcome to another edition, another disaster season edition. And for disaster seasons, you need old season Millwall fans. And I've brought in my new favourite seasoned Millwall fans, Dave Collins. Welcome back to the show, Dave.
Hi, Nick. Disaster Dave here. Always on hand.
Now you've chosen a dolly of a season here, mate. Do you want to give it an introduction, the season concerned?
I mean, if there was ever probably a season of two halves and a disaster season, you're never going to go stray far from the 95-96 McCarthy Nickel disaster. It's up there with the best of them.
It is. I mean, it's funny doing the research for this season. I mean, obviously, you know, you live it at a time, and then football being the ever-turning wheel that is, you move on and you forget so much. But this was like watching, it's like watching Titanic, the movie. You know that there's going to be an iceberg coming, and you know that the ship's going to sink, and they're all going to, half of them are going to die. Yet somehow there's a fascination, a morbid fascination in watching it over and over again. And there's so much in this season. So many little tangents.
Season's got everything, Nick. It's got poor transfers in, poor transfers out. It's got shocking results. It's got a couple of Russians that I'm sure we'll talk about as well. And behind all of that, I think the club really was falling apart behind the scenes. And although the fans at the time probably realised that things weren't great and there was a lot of angst against McCarthy, I was probably one of the people who were, you know, I was in the McCarthy outcamp. I wouldn't make any bones about that. But I don't think until afterwards did we realise the state that the actual club was really in, really.
No, and I mean, because this no season exists in its own alone, and to bring it to, for anyone who's not aware of the sequence of the early 90s, I mean, we'd moved to the new den in 1993-94, and although that was for me, one of the proudest moments when I walked into the new stadium, the construction costs and the financial impact, and then of course the fallout of the Derby playoff situation in that the end of that season, meant that the club was carrying some financial issues. I think that's the note I've made to myself, is the financial issues underpin this season. So although we were carrying a debt, Dave, weren't we, going into 95-96? But God almighty, did we add to it? Did we not dig our own? We were in a hole and we carried on digging, didn't we, this year?
Yeah, we certainly did. I think that really what happened was that this was the last season for me where we still thought, rightly or wrongly, and I think the club thought, I don't think the supporters thought it, that we was a Premiership club in waiting.
Yeah, I agree.
After this season, that disappeared. And this was the last year where we've been in the new ground. We thought we had the ground, we had the players, we had the manager. And again, that's the club we rather than the supporters we. And I think, you know, this was the end of that fairy tale, really.
I agree. I mean, we, you know, the early 90s, we were sponsored by Captain Morgan, a world-known brand. We'd built a new stadium, which had ambitions, laughably, now as you look back at it, to be a venue that would, you know, like an O2 Dome type venue where you'd have gigs and sports events over and above Millwall. None of that came to pass. And I think you're right. It's a good way to look at it, actually. It's like kind of the death of a dream in a way, wasn't it, that idea that we would be a Premier League side with expectations to be there, possibly, might be the best way to look at it.
Well, just on that point, it made me laugh, actually. If we not go from the Captain Morgan sponsorship in this season to the live TV, the weather in Norwegian, the following one?
I believe we did, yes. We had the South London Press that kind of cushioned the impact of going from Captain Morgan that you might drink in Cannes or on Teebs or somewhere like that to, via the South London Press that you might read in Catford down to live TV that came from a back studio, I think, Canary Wharf, wouldn't it? But it was a tumble. And those three sponsors tell a story themselves, actually.
Just a little side issue there. I used to sit in block 44 at this time, and in one of the boxes behind me used to be the girl we used to present the weather in Norwegian.
Oh, Anna Marie Foss, the Norwegian. Foss, yeah, and she was, I think she modelled on the club shop catalogue. This is when the club shop still had stuff to sell and people wanted to buy, and they made an effort to try and shift goods. I mean, that's all gone out the window now as well. I mean, so many stories in this season. I've compared it with the Titanic because you kind of know where it's going to finish, but let's start at the beginning. We'd had to sell some talent coming into the season for financial reasons. In fact, we'd sold £4.9 million worth of player, Dave, over the summertime. And most of that was Andy Roberts. And Mark Kennedy had gone at the end of March 19, so just on the back end of the previous season. But Kennedy had gone for £2.3 million and Andy Roberts £2.5 million. Plus other names like Mark Beard and Etienne Vervier had gone, and even the legend that is Greg Berry had gone. So, you know, this was quite a loss of talent, really, wasn't it, over the course of that summertime coming into the season, really.
That wouldn't be holy fuck, it's Gregory John Berry, by the way. Still on the Wikipedia page, by the way.
They're still there. I can't believe that. Someone's having a laugh with him.
Obviously, Uwar Phil Barbar also went as well.
He'd gone too. Yeah, that's right. So we'd lost a lot of players who of some standing, I think. I mean, this is a point where Andy Roberts would command justifiably a £2.5 million price tag. Yeah. But we spent, I mean, this is the thing. It's, you know, it's one thing to cut your cloth according to your means, and there's a lot of wisdom in that, financial wisdom. But we actually spent a total of £2.3 million going back out, but on such players as Maurice Doyle, Bobby Bowery, Uwe Fuchs, £750,000, Dave, on Uwe Fuchs.
Unbelievable.
Ricky Newman, $400,000 on the Ricky Newman. And then Gerard Lavin, £500,000. I mean, this was mad. And then leave aside the Russians. Let's not even touch that. Yeah, that's going to come later on in the season. I mean, you know, you've lost players of talent and signed up some of the poniest players, I think, in our collective Millwall memories. It was mismanagement and from a board level downwards, in my opinion.
Well, to be honest, though, we did get a couple of bargains. We got Mickey Bennett and Anton Rogan for free. Yeah.
Always look on the bright side.
although we did actually get Lucas Neal as well, but a bit later on. So one chink of light in
the one shining light of that. So transfer dealings that leave much to be desired. Some of it, I mean, obviously the selling was driven by the need to reduce the debt that the club had, and still does exist. We've never made a profit. So, we weren't making any kind of profit at this stage. We were losing, and that was to try and contain that. I mean, I suppose the other thing that underpins the whole season, Dave, would be Mick McCarthy's eye increasingly being drawn to the allure of the Republic of Ireland job across the water. I mean, Jack Charlton's tenure as Republic of Ireland manager was looking shaky. I think he was looking at retirement. But certainly as those months of this season started, and increasingly McCarthy was being spoken of in, you know, flattering terms for the Irish job, and really some of the runs of form from Millwall point of view reflected the when that started to come to pass, really, didn't it?
Well, it's interesting. I'm sure we'll go through the season like month by month, but there's a particular point around sort of November through to his departure,
yeah,
where I don't think we may have won one game in 15 or something, you know, and the FAI clearly just had this drawn out process, protracted process of getting him on boarding, and clearly had no, by that stage, he had no interest. He wanted to go, and we really suffered at that point. We went from first in the table, you know, and then we just plummeted really from that point onwards.
Well, that's the thing to say to I mean, this is what, 25, nearly 25 years ago, isn't it?
Yeah.
So kids might be around. I didn't realise that we were actually top of the table for a large slice of this season, when in first position going into as late as December. We're in the top position, although I don't know about your memory of it. It's funny. My memory at the time was, although we were top, I was deeply unexcited at the time. I didn't believe that this squad was a promotion winning or championship potential side. It just didn't feel real at the time, and I didn't believe in it. How did you feel at this point, when these early months, when results were somehow going our way, and somehow we're finding ourselves in the top two, in the top one?
Yeah, I'd gone into the previous two or three seasons pretty sort of like annoyed with McCarthy. Never really bought into his style of play yet. We had some good seasons, don't get me wrong, and I'm probably sort of was living the fantasy that I still thought we was, you know, top division team. But, you know, he dismantled a good squad that was left. Rioch had a lot of issues, but Rioch left him a really good squad. And in the course of two or three years, he dismantled it. Another person that went, when we picked up Bobby Bowery at the start of the year, it was part of that money actually was to do with the Chris Armstrong. So
Chris Armstrong, yeah.
And what a player he was at the time.
I know. Absolutely.
Rioch from nowhere. And then just jettisoned. You know, Neil Wemblem's another player that sort of, I think, McCarthy got rid of. There was quite a few players to come through that, you know, McCarthy got rid of. And to be honest, I didn't go into this season with any optimism at all. I think things were just getting progressively worse season by season. The season before this one, yeah, we did have a good cup run. We had this. He had this ability, McCarthy, to raise it occasionally in cup ties. Obviously, we had the 0-0 and then the replay with Arsenal
and Chelsea, we played Chelsea, didn't we? Yeah,
but then lost to QPR in the fifth round.
That's so right. Yeah,
but the season itself, the season before this, was completely uninspiring. We were bottom of the table at the start of the year.
Yeah.
We got ourselves up to about 12th, and I think we sort of stayed around there. So, look, on the face of it, you look at the squad, right, and on paper, before we even saw them play, you would go, oh, well, Uwe Fuchs, Chris Malkin, Keller, Thatcher, Ray, Lucas Neal, Van Blerk has got the makings of a good side. But even as we started that season, and we was top, as you say, we was actually top virtually from the start of the year to early December, I never thought that we were promotion candidates.
No, I never. I mean, it's interesting looking back at the results. You know, opening day, a win over Grimsby 2-1 at the Den in front of just 8,500, which is a poor crowd, you know, given that the stadium officially still held 20,000. It's less than half full. And you're right. I mean, there wasn't a side, if I'm going to be honest, as a Millwall side, Keller, Bennett, Thatcher, Doyle, Witter, Stevens, Savage, Ray, Dixon, Kerry Dixon, Chris Malkin, Van Blerk. As a side, that wasn't one that's going to make me cross the road with excitement, but it wasn't a relegation side either. It was not, I thought that was a fairly average middle for diddle kind of, you know, mid-table, either side of mid-table, with about par where that side and that squad should finish. But we managed to outperform ourselves really in these opening, well, up to August, September, October, really. We seemed to scratch results out. And I don't remember us ever really dominating anybody, but apart from the odd League Cup win over Everton, the two-legged win over Everton, 0-0 at home, then a magnificent 4-2 win up at Goodison Park, which I think touches on what you said. He could pull out results when you least expected them.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, August, we had a pretty decent month. We was unbeaten. I remember going to the first away game of the season at Port Vale. Yeah. Kerry Dickman scored quite a good goal, actually. I'd look at it early on. It's not much off this season on YouTube, thankfully. But that was okay. reliving that 25 years on. So, yeah, August, we did pretty well. September, it was a bit of a mixed month. I think we only won once, and that was at home to Luton. Then October, the form got better. But then again, this is the thing, right? We had a great win in the Coca-Cola Cup against Everton, beating 4-2 in extra time. And then in the next sort of round at home to Sheffield Wednesday, we lost.
Yeah, it was inconsistency, wasn't it? And just looking at that Everton win, I mean, to go to Goodison Park as a second-tier side and score four is an achievement in itself. It was, and then you get players like Scott Taylor who scored two up there, and you think, well, it's the start of something. And he disappeared. I think he had only about 10 or 12 games for the Lions before he went on. The team's form would kind of hint at something, and yet somehow never really kick on. But somehow we got ourselves into first place, and I suppose that's not to be sneezed at. To be top of the table is as good as you're going to get in any competition. And we were top through November. Some decent wins there. And then we seem to hit this awful, awful, awful run of form from November onwards. And this would be really when the speculation really started with the Irish job. I will forever hold a grudge. And I never liked Mick McCarthy. I can't, like when he goes on the Sky. This season, for me, blots his copybook forever, because this, to me, showed a lack of professionalism in not taking his job seriously whilst a more attractive role was being dangled in front of him in Dublin.
I agree. I mean, I was never a big fan of McCarthy. I don't like the way he got the job, the way, for instance, he almost started a players' revolt against Rioch and then become player manager, got the job that way. Don't like the way he left the job. I thought his style of play was extremely one-dimensional, quite boring. If we didn't have, during his reign, if we didn't have Alex Ray banging in 12, 15, I think he actually got 16 goals in this season.
I think he was, he scored high this year, yeah.
Yeah, without someone like Ray, who has like the glimmer of flair in the team, I think his team would have been tepid, absolutely tepid. And in some respects, there was no, it didn't pass me by, and no greater moment than in 2004 when we beat Sunderland in the semi-final. And I actually look back in hindsight, it's a wonderful thing, but I can remember at the time being pretty confident about that game because McCarthy was managing Sunderland,
You're a better man than me on that front. I wasn't confident on that. But anyway, I know what you mean. I just, he may well have been flattered by the international interest, but I mean, when you look at that, it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 straight losses, a couple of three draws, and then more losses. And this, to me, just says that the team know that he's on his way. He's on his way. He don't care. The leadership has gone from the squad entirely, and we've thrown away a situation where we're top of the table. By Christmas, we're now mid-table, and looking downwards rather than upwards.
Well, this is the thing, right? Start of November. We played Birmingham away. I can remember going to that. First versus second. We was 2-1 up. And then we had a bit of witter time.
Yep.
And they got an equaliser in the sort of in the 90th or 88th minute.
Yeah.
Something like that. And then it started away at Stoke. 1-0 loss. And then effectively loss. Draw, loss. And we'd gone literally from first at the start of November to 11th by January the 1st. Unbelievable.
Well, it's a failure of management. I also want to say this because I think that it's easy to blame the manager, and I think that the game obviously does regard them as a focal point, and so they are. They certainly carry the can when the squad fails. But that team of players there failed us, because you look at the names in that. I mean, this run of poor form, five losses on the spin there, includes Casey Keller. It's got Ben Thatcher, the defender everyone loves to tout, and you've got the likes of Keith Stevens, Ray's in there. It was a collective thing as much as it was McCarthy's thing. The players take the pitch with an attitude that they may say, well, the manager's on his way, so why should we give a shit? But they're still being paid, and they could still have done more. That was, leave aside the early season promise, that was still a mid-table side at that point. And to fail and then fail on the grand scale as they would do for the remainder of the season, I think comes back as much to the management. It comes back to the board and the chairman, but it also comes back to the squad for me as well, because that's a failure on their account too.
I agree. I mean, to be honest, I found a really good piece when Saturday comes on the football fanzine, talking about this particular season. And I agree with you. When a player goes on the pitch, you want professionalism and all that. Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
But we went through this period of time here. McCarthy clearly was talking to the FAI. We was in first place, soon to be going downhill rapidly. That's clearly unsettled the squad, I would imagine. When Saturday comes, says that, all the signings that McCarthy ever signed were put on top dollar wages, right? And just to prove the point here, in 96, we had 40 players on the playing staff. The total bill was £4.1 million in 1996. Probably ain't that now. And compare that to 88. So 8 years earlier, we had 33 players and only £825,000 bill. So even with inflation, that is still not comparable. So we were buying players, having, easy lives, lovely grounds.
Yep.
Really probably just, in some respects, not giving a shit, Nick, whether or not they were winning, losing, drawing. People like Stevens and probably Ray and a couple of others aside. But the people that we were buying in, we were putting on big, big dollars. And if all that weren't enough, before McCarthy decided to hang it up, he decided to have a chat with Bobby Robson and give us the best leaving present he possibly could.
We'll come to that. In the litany of things not to forgive Mick McCarthy, one other thing is a 2-0 home loss to Charlton. I mean, no Millwall manager can survive that for long, unfortunately. 6-0 loss at Sunderland. Do you remember that one, Dave?
Remember that. And that, to me, that was, before hindsight blurred my view and, completely. I do remember that game. And that was when you don't know all the issues that come to light later on, years later, mismanagement of the club, people on big wages, so on and so forth. But that day, that again, we were still top. And I think that was just looking at the Mill history page. Again, that was another first versus second game.
Yep.
And to go away and lose 6-0, I can remember thinking, something's up here. Something isn't right. You don't go away first versus second and get tonked 6-0.
No, I mean, it's a failure from the top downwards. I mean, we'll come on to the chairman and the what I will call the boardroom failure, which comes with the signing of the Russians, because that's probably the summary of where this club had reached at that point, the stupidity of those two signings. But I mean, that team there that's got beat at Sunderland, Casey Keller, Gerard Lavin, Ben Thatcher, Doyle, Rogan, Stevens, Savage, Ray, Fuchs, Malkin, Van Blerk, and then on the bench, Lee McRobert and Taylor and Newman. Well, you've got to look at those players too, in my opinion. I'm not making the same point to an extent, but this comes back to the squad, because you can get beat at places like Sunderland, but you're not going to collapse on the grand scale unless there's a real problem within the club and the lack of spirit, the lack of unity, team unity that was just rampant at that time.
You are listening to Achten Millwall.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
There we are. So we go into Christmas still. I mean, I'd forgotten how long it took for Mick McCarthy to go. I mean, this was like an endless willy won't he kind of romance. And I mean, Jack Charlton was actually sacked, I think, at on Christmas Eve, and then it became game on for McCarthy to cross over to the Dublin job. But it just seemed to drag on and on. And in the end, he didn't go until February of 96, when the form by that stage plummeting, weren't we, at that point? Loss upon loss upon loss.
That's a really good point, Nick, because, you know, I think, you know, when people think of this season, they think of McCarthy and Nicol, and probably put a lot more of the blame onto Nicol. I mean, Nicol did have blame, and he certainly, in the seasons to follow, turned out to be a shocker, right? But for me, Nicol only managed 16 games this year. Okay, that's still 16 games, right? And when he took over, we was in ninth place, I think, right? So we were still top half, but that don't tell the story of where the club was at. We was already a bottom five club by that stage. You know, just the mentality of the squad that you've touched on, couldn't agree more. You know, there was a disconnect between the squad and the management. What was going on behind the scenes was, you know, obviously rotten to the core as well. And that took quite a few years to probably resolve as well, you know. So I think in some respects, if anyone got given a point, not that he was any good, I'm making that.
No.
Not a fan of Nicol at all, but was he given a poison chalice?
I mean, it's interesting. In my mind, it's interesting doing the research for these seasons. Some listeners will be saying it's not interesting at all, but it is. I find it interesting because in my mind, I associated the Russians with the Jimmy Nicol and the kind of demise of the club. The two went hand in hand. Actually, they predated the arrival of Jimmy Nicol, I'd lost that in my mind. The Russians arrived on their first game, which was on the 13th of January, 1996. As you rightly say, Dave, signed as a result of a recommendation from Sir Bobby Robson.
Getting his own back for the riot in 78, no doubt.
I mean, the Russians probably have a show in themselves, but anyway, Sergei Uran and Vladimir Kulkov was his name. And they were playing for Benfica via Spartak Moscow on the kind of jiggery pokery of obtaining a Portuguese passport somehow, and that enabled them to play in the EU. That meant they could play for us, and we strolled along under recommendation from Sir Bobby. And signed them up, causing great excitement at the time, Dave. I mean, I didn't have a season ticket at this point, so I went down to get a ticket on the day and couldn't get in. The place was 14,200, but it was technically a sellout on the day. So I thought, oh God, you know, I'm going to miss one of the greatest moments in Millwall history when our two World Cup playing Russians come out and rip the place apart. And lo and behold, I think the only thing they've been ripping apart was the bag off the vodka bottle from the off license.
I'm glad I laughed in. This was getting far too serious for a few minutes. I mean, to be honest, you know, it's really hard for anyone under the age of about 35, probably, to understand how big these two signings were.
This was big news.
I'm not going to actually help with my sort of analogy now, because I'm even going further back in time. But when I was a kid, I can remember Alan Stevenson going to Charlton.
Yeah, yeah, that's right.
I think he was European Footballer of the Year at the time.
He was. I think he cost them a fortune as well.
He went to Charlton, of all places, right, with a ground that was falling apart, you know, the team that was shit, you know. And so for us to get Juran, actually, well, both of them played in the Champions League that season, and Juran was mad in a match, I think, even, I can't remember if it was home or away, against Blackburn, because they was...
There was something, yeah, yeah.
So we was actually signing two pretty known European stars.
European level stars, yeah. And World Cup, but they played...
At a certain age, would ever quite sort of quantify what on earth we was doing. And in fairness, we didn't know what we was doing at the time.
Clearly. Clearly. I mean, the lead into this was that the chairman of the sign was a chap called Peter Mead, who was an advertising, quite a successful man in advertising. I think if I put myself in Peter Mead's shoes and trying to think what he was going through his head, because I don't think McCarthy could care less whether we signed these Russians or not. His mind was already in international football in Dublin. He was out there taking over Big Jack's legacy. So I don't think McCarthy had any input. I think this was down to the chairman. And I think he was probably imagining that this would bring an exciting touch of glamour to the season, Dave. One that would put bums on seats in the Den, 14,000. We're signing, as you say, you're right. I mean, European level talent, World Cup, the Russian national stars, this was going to kick us on. This was going to be the spark that took us to the next level.
and this is the thing, right? If people need to sort of equate why we ended up where we ended up. So, as I said, right, we had a wage bill of over £4 million. And then we decided to bring these two jokers in and actually give them five times the average player wage.
Absolutely. Well, according to Wiki, I mean, I don't know how true this is, £150,000 each for Juran and Vasily Korkov, not Vladimir, Vasily Korkov, each got 150, and then were paid five times the wage of the rest of the squad. I mean, what's that going to do for squad mentality? You're seeing these two blokes that look, if they're in a pub side, you say they're carrying a little bit too much timber for the pub team, wouldn't they? I mean, they were out of condition. They were...
Out of control.
Out of control. Alcoholics driving around Deptford, pissed out of their heads, getting
you
nicked.
You ain't got done for drink driving.
Look at the squad, obviously, they've still got to be professional, but it must be very, very tough, Dave, if you're seeing two pissheads basically coming into your workplace, being paid five times. Try that out, your place of work. I'm on the vodka sitting next to you, five times your amount, and all I'm doing is falling about because I'm out of, it's not going to be great for team cohesion or morale, is it?
No, to be honest, I mean, it's almost like ludicrous. It's beyond ludicrous when you look back now. You know, what on earth was Millwall doing playing around with European talent like this? But to bring it back to a bit of seriousness, I mean, a few minutes ago, you're talking about 6-0. I mean, that was a decent squad that lost 6-0.
It was.
So how do you bring squad morale back up and make it better? Let's sign two pissed up Russians who don't give a fuck and they're going to cost the earth.
Power good. Way to go, as they say in the American shows. Way to go. So there we are. So that takes us to Port Vale, 2-1 loss at home. By this stage, the fizz of the Russians went in that moment quicker than the fizz of your gin and tonic in the pub. We're now down to 11. Actually, we recovered briefly because we beat Grimsby, Dave, I'd forgotten this little brief recovery. Went to Grimsby and got a win there, took us back to sixth in the table. So we're still, we were sixth in January. We're still not badly placed in the table, you know, reasonably advanced into the season. But then another run of, well, indifferent form, poor form. I think we're going to get three wins between February, March, April. Three wins for the remainder of the season, actually. Which is again, you know, it's on the squad because, I mean, in the end, McCarthy will go. We're still lumbered with the Russians, of course. Although they were dropped quite quickly. I think one got injured, falling over in the pub or something like that.
Yeah, Kulkov got injured and I think he went home in March. Juran decided to stay. But what was one of the things when I was doing a little bit of research and during that first game that they played, one of my least favourite refs was actually refereeing that game.
Who was that? Let's have a look.
Uriah Rennie.
Oh, Rennie. God almighty. Yeah, I do. Yeah, that's right. Mr. Yellow Card, wasn't he?
I mean, to be honest, you know, the Russians, Kulkov, I can't actually remember that much about him.
No, I don't.
I can remember Juran, first of all, thinking this bloke is playing in a different universe to the rest of the team. He was doing things that other players probably could only dream of, potentially have not even dreamt of it because it was that good. But then soon that sort of, he must have got exasperated, thought, fuck this, hit the bottle, and then basically didn't really care less, I don't think.
No, you could tell that Juran was a very, very, very good player, despite being overweight, despite not being committed. He had vision, he had a powerful shot on him and he was playing the ball and I think we've said on previous shows, playing into spaces where the team didn't have the wherewithal or the imagination to run into these spaces. They were not at that level. So you could tell he was a good player, but he went off the boil, so to speak, and the team went off the boil and there was no team spirit by the end of the season. I think there was just nothing left. It was like an empty tank of petrol by the end of this campaign, wasn't it?
No, you're right. The Russians were coming in January, February. Obviously, you had McCarthy out, and then Nicol come in. So Nicol come in, and by that stage, as I say, we're still a top half team. But if you look, going back from, you know, November till Nicol's appointment,
yeah,
11 games, we'd won one. We'd drawn three, we'd lost seven. So top of the table team had picked up 6 points in 11 games.
Yeah.
So by the time he took over, we actually wasn't a ninth place team by that stage. We were clearly a bottom five, bottom six.
Relegation fodder. Yeah. I mean, you're right about Nicol. I don't think it's fair for him to shoulder the complete blame. He had enough time to scratch out the points that could have saved us. And, that would have been possible. And I think it's a failure on him not to be able to get enough out of that team and not to make the changes to get a team that's prepared to fight, leaving aside the decisions taken by those that ran the club. But this is a McCarthy disaster. This is a McCarthy and Peter Mead created disaster this whole season. With Jimmy Nicol putting his salt and vinegar on top of the chips at the end of the season and a little bit of a little bit of condiment to go with it.
100% Nicol would come into his own next season when he bought.
Yeah, you really wouldn't see the best of Jimmy Nicol until the season after, would you? some terrible results. I mean, look, losing at home to Crystal Palace towards the end of the season, end of March, 4-1 at home. Yeah. That was a tough game to take.
I remember that game. That was a shocker, that was.
A draw at Tranmere, no losses at West Brom. Last win of the season was at home to Birmingham, 2-0, 10th of April. And that left us still 18th. You know, you can still say you can survive from that position, 18th position. But then we lose three on the spin. We go to Huddersfield, we go to Oldham, we go to Stoke and get beat.
Well, here's the thing as well. That when we went to Oldham, so all through the season, our disciplinary record was shocking. Absolutely. Yeah. Beyond that, we had 73 yellow cards, and seven red cards in that season.
Yeah.
When we lost to Oldham, if you look at the team, the back four, when we lost at home to Oldham 1-0, not one of the back four was a regular back four player.
No, that's
Keller. All four were suspended at the same time.
Keller, Doyle, Rogan, Connor. I don't even remember Connor. Witter. Yeah, I mean, you're right. I mean, that's not your regular turnout at all, is it? You know, but to lose those three games, whatever the reasoning, it was shocking. It was a Millwall made disaster of a season.
And it even was, by that time, the back four, by that stage, because obviously the season, the squad chop and change so much. But if you go back and look a few games above, there was a settled back four of Lavin, Thatcher, Van Blerk, and Stevens.
Yeah.
For that game, you know, Doyle, who would like to be. Right. I think I've talked about Doyle previously. Right, so he's at right back, Rogan at left back. And Witter was falling out of favour and then come back in for that one game. And, you know, whoever Connor is could be dead.
James Connor, do you remember him? I don't remember him at all. I know the old memory goes. I mean, there are names in the squad that you think, I can't remember these people. I mean, 34 players were used over the whole campaign, which culminated in the trip to Ipswich on the last day of the season. We still had survival as a possibility, Ipswich. I think if we'd have won there, we would have stayed up, if memory serves.
Correct, because he wasn't in the bottom three.
No. You
know, the last game of the season, Portsmouth were below us in 22nd place.
And,
not hit the bottom three all season,
No, I mean, we scratched out a 0-0 draw and a win. We needed a goal, we needed a win. Couldn't do it. Portsmouth, I can't remember if they won on the last day. They certainly finished on equal points as we did, and we went down on goal difference, and that would be that. Bottom three, third division, here we come. I mean, that would also be the start of the decline, really. This season led us to administration, Dave. I mean, I know it's tough to get any laughs out of this season, other than the fact that the Russians were, and their antics running around Deptford on the slosh. There's no laughs in this season at all, really. It's just one thing on top of the other, leading to administration.
And I honestly believe that, obviously you've done a podcast. It seemed, it was at the start of COVID. It seems like it was a year ago. I think it was only 4 weeks ago now.
Yeah, yeah.
When you did this podcast on two disaster seasons being 05-06 and then the Holloway one.
Yeah.
But for me, when you look back, this has, for me, this is the worst season of being a Millwall supporter. It beats anything. It beats Anderson. It beats everything for me because it was a unmitigated disaster on the field, off the field, and it led us to a place that, which was ended up being administration at the end of the day.
It's an interesting point because, I hadn't thought of us as being Premier League, expectations of Premier League football at the start of the season. By the end of it, we were expecting to be League One and nothing much more than that, It's an interesting way to look at it. And I think that this was the start of a long-term struggle for the club, which we're still possibly only now, despite the COVID side of things, only now starting to come away from, because we were mentally a third division side from this point onwards until I think we still collectively think, well, how will we avoid relegation each season? We still have this small-time mindset. Part of me says this, despite the ham-fisted attempts, this was the last time that we maybe could think of ourselves as aiming for the big time still.
Yeah, I in the way I almost put this in my mind in some type of sort of like category is that this was the final season of what I class as the old Millwall. The ground itself was concocted during success in late 80s when we were flying high. The grounds had a part to play in this as well because, we took the ground on, we had great plans for it, it was going to be a multi-purpose venue, None of that ever transpired. Do you remember when you could order hot dogs and burger at your seat? Was one of the things they talked about when they was opening it.
Well, the talk, that's right. The talk was McDonald's were going to, and KFC were going to have franchises in the ground. It was going to be a proper ground, like Spurs or Arsenal, you know.
And you ended up with shit burger. Do you remember? Harp was the first fucking lager, yeah, that you could buy. So you had all these things happening, and for me, this was the lead in to say, you know, okay, the game's up. We are not that club that we thought we could be, which was some type of yo-yoing club between the Premier League and this is a defining season for me, because all them aspirations sort of, they didn't die forever. They were just, we have them aspirations today, don't get me wrong, but they're different aspirations. These were grandiose, almost unrealistic aspirations I think we had at this particular time. And this season was the end of it for me.
I wonder sometimes, you're right, I mean, I think back to the 70s when there was the famous Asda attempt to redevelop the grounds at Coldblow Lane. And this was also built on the same idea that we would be this kind of first division outfit built on this new idea of supermarkets and clubs coming together. The early 90s with the development of a new den, the multi-purpose use, again, aiming high. I wonder sometimes whether the regeneration of the South Bermondsey area, which seems, God knows when that might happen in the current economic climate, whether that's coming from the, you know, I think maybe it's put the fear of the grand scheme at Millwall, because we seem to fall sucker for it every so often, don't we? I wonder whether that's coming from this direction too. It's going to be the death of us at some point in the future.
I totally agree. I mean, some of there's a, obviously when you look at the web, there's some, there is some content if you search far enough, and some of it's pretty decent. There's one website on there which is called the 90s Football Party,
right?
And its summary of Millwall in this season is perfect. I mean, it says, if anything, it was the early season success that ultimately punctured them. The club appeared awash with the attitude, bar their long-suffering supporters, the only ones who seemed to see this coming, that they were an uncrowned Premier League side. The players believed their own hype, Meade bought into it, and none of them saw the iceberg until it was too late. Nicol was out of his depth and probably the wrong appointment, but the stain of malaise had seeped into the fabric well before his arrival. And then it goes on, and it's quite a good piece, actually. Actually, is unfortunately pretty true.
We're back on the Titanic and the iceberg metaphors again, aren't we? And we would sink in the course of 1996-97 when Nicol would take over and do his worst, finishing in administration later on. But those are maybe a shows for another day.
I think so. I mean, just also, just on that piece, and if any of the listeners think we're being quite
overdoing it
towards venomous towards McCarthy, again, on this website, it says, a lot of the blame has to reside with McCarthy. Finally given some money to spend, he proceeded to bring a succession of players who continue to feature in the worst Lions 11 polls to this day. Fuchs, Rogan, Bowery, Newman. Yeah. Moreover, Meade misjudged the prevailing mood. There was no great appetite among the support to fight to keep the manager. While he'd done very well upon inheriting a strong side from Rioch in the early 90s, the more the team became his own, the blunter and blander it got. There you go. There's a good summary.
That sums up Mick McCarthy for me too there, Dave. That's one of the, not so many laughs in this week's show, dear listeners, unfortunately, but it was tough to wring many laughs out of this season at the time, I can tell you that much. Only the Russians really supplied any comic input, and even they were, the joke was on us, so I'm not sure there's much of a laugh in that, really, ultimately. Wonderful stuff, Dave Collins. Really appreciate your input on this disaster season. I feel that we're going to have to touch the Jimmy Nicol season another day, but we'll sort that out separately, mate. Really appreciate
it. We'll have to do a happy one before then.
Happy one. Trump, there's not much happiness down the den. We'll find a happy subject to do another day. Big thank you, Dave Collins. Thank you for your time, mate. Much appreciated to you.
Pleasure.
Achtung Millwall and the Real Millwall Fan Show are the number one Millwall podcast, and we want to hear from you. So get in touch with us. Let us know your thoughts, your views, your rants about all things Millwall. We've got email, achtungmillwall@gmail.com. All one word, achtungmillwall@gmail.com. You can get in touch with us and leave us a voicemail on 0208 144 0232. That's 0208 144 0232. Leave us a voicemail. No human will be involved in the receipt of your message. So give us a shout. Tell us what you think about all things Millwall. And the best messages will be read out on air.
Until literally the 80th minute, and then he would stand up and rant himself to exhaustion at McCarthy for the final 10 minutes. I'll tell you one thing we didn't mention, but it wasn't in this season, but I'm sure it was under McCarthy. Do you remember when that, I don't know if he was at the game, I'm sure it was Port Vale at home, I could be wrong, but one guy did a pitch invasion and went and sat in the...
Oh, it was Andy May's dad. Or he came, I don't know if it wasn't Andy May's dad, but he became known for some reason as Andy May's dad, didn't he?
I'm not sure what season that was, but that summed up...
It was round about that time. But no, McCarthy for me, always, you know, he created great hostility at the time. I just didn't like him. I didn't like his style of play. He seemed to me to be living off of Bruce Rioch's talent, and Rioch's an easy man to, you know, when we've done some of the players' interviews, they've been talking about his sergeant major style, his abrupt military approach. But he did have an eye for a team. He created a team that played football, and some of the best football I've ever seen, possibly yourself, down at Coldblow Lane. But McCarthy took that team over and that style, and somehow everyone thought that was Mick McCarthy's style. It wasn't. He was using somebody else's creation, and maybe they didn't have the emotional intelligence to make it happen. But for McCarthy to come in and take it that over, and then to take the credit, it always seemed fraudulent to me. There was a sense of fakery about it, you know.
Yeah, I do you know what? I thought that. I mean, obviously, no one will ever, for me, Doherty and George Graham will always be the best two managers in for me. I thought George Graham, actually, if I had to put my life on it, I'd say George Graham was probably the best manager. But obviously, Doherty done things that no one's done. But that second season, you know, we got found out. I think the clubs realised we was one-dimensional by that stage. We'd oof the ball up, we'd play from the front, bring the wingers in.
Yeah.
And that was our style, really. And for me, Rioch was the first man, you know, I was probably just too young to appreciate, if it was worth appreciating, Gordon Jago, right? I was just a kid.
Yeah.
Didn't remember it, but couldn't appreciate it. But for me, Rioch was the first manager that they actually changed the style of play. You know, they weren't that successful, ultimately. But you look at the players he brought in, Armstrong, another one no one ever talks about, and I saw him the other day on the web, and I thought, my God, he was actually not bad. You know, Ian Bogey, another player.
He was a good player, yeah.
Good little player, Bogey was. You know, and then McCarthy, he just brought these players in. And
no, you know, there were nothing players. I mean, all of the Rioch signings, I mean, again, on the same note, Bogey. Also, John McGlashan, there was a good, industrious little forward, you know, who went to Bolton and scored goals, and, you know, he was never going to win, you know, win the big prizes, but he was a very, very good League Two striker. And the other players, I remember, you know, the likes of Colin Cooper came in
Colin Cooper.
You know, McGlashan, I remember him being a decent midfielder, and players of that kind, Paul Kerr, I remember him being, again, industrious. They didn't stop running and didn't stop playing. Total contrast to the season that we've just discussed, because this is where you see players giving up, and no Bruce Rioch team really gave up in that way. I can see how he would have been a difficult man to work for, with his requirement that you couldn't wear jeans and had to put a collar and tie on to come to work and all that kind of idea. But in fairness, that's no different to most people when they go to work anyway. You know,
I mean, it's a sad ending as well for Alex Ray, obviously, you know, who's for me one of the best players ever. You know, that he went out. And people, I do remember A lot of people blamed him because he got sent off, I think, in our last home game, and he missed Ipswich away.
Yeah, I think he wasn't available for that.
It was a needless sending off. I can actually remember it was like some lashing out of someone in the last minute of the game or something. And people were criticising Ray. And I just thought, if there's one person who was beyond, almost beyond criticism, it was Alex Ray. Because what he'd done for that club under, you know, for them years, he was, you know, unbelievably good at scoring goals. But
16 goals for the season.
I genuinely meant that, by the way, about McCarthy. I knew that. I had this feeling, McCarthy, Sunderland, we was always going to win that. And that is, you know, I sent you that story. Yeah. I threw back from a fucking holiday because I was that confident.
Mystic Collins. That's great stuff, Dave.
But when you look back, though, you watched that, obviously, didn't you, recently?
Yeah.
Sunderland was so like old Millwall,
one-dimensional. And they kept going, but you knew what you were going to get. So if you could cater to that and handle it, then you're on the winning side of it, you know.
And he took their best player off.
He did.
55 minutes.
McAteer, yeah.
Yeah.
No, I know.
No, they took off a big young big striker, didn't they? Like,
McAteer came off towards the end, didn't he? They took him off, didn't they? Was he sent off? I can't remember. Anyway,
McAteer was sent off, wasn't he?
Sent off, sorry.
McAteer was sent off.
Yeah, he took off player off early on. I can't think of the bloke's name now. But anyway, yeah, misjudgment on McCarthy's part.
Yeah, but anyway.
All right, mate. That.
I feel a bit better now. I've got a lot off my chest now.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.